Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Jaeger CPA Review and More. This podcast is sponsored by Jaeger CPA Review, the course provider that deals only with the AICPA blueprints. Please go to the JaegerCPAReview.com website and look at our various products. And we believe in seeing is believing. And therefore, please look at our 3-day free trial. Pick a subject, and it'll give you 3 days free access, unlimited, to that product. And I believe that once you look at that product and see how it works, you will pick Jaeger CPA Review as your course provider. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 301-874-4900. If you press 5, you may even talk to Phil Jaeger. Take care, everyone, on your journey for the CPA exam. We wish you the best and good luck.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Jaeger CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at JaegerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Jaeger.
Everyone, this is Phil Jaeger, and I want to welcome you to another episode of CPA Review and More. And today, we're not going to be talking about CPA Review. We're going to be talking about more. And it's an interesting field we're going to be talking about. Some of you may be against it. Some of you may say, hey, it's the greatest thing that's going to happen. All right. We're going to talk about a gentleman who's a CPA who deals in the cannabis industry, which is really marijuana, okay? And this thing is becoming, actually, they've done studies. Marijuana is a very medicinal, you know, drug, if you want to call it that. They give it to cancer patients, right? Let me introduce my Zachary Gordon. We'll call him Zach. Zach's a CPA, and he lives in the New York metropolitan area, all right? And if you don't know the New York, you know, metropolitan area, we don't really care where he is, but he lives in Westchester. And I'm really excited to talk to him because I was born and raised in New York, Long Island, all right? And I always like to talk to New Yorkers. We are the friendliest people. Do you agree, Zach? Zach, are we the friendliest
people? I can't argue with that, that's for sure.
Yeah, look at that. Smiles, he's happy. But anyway, the cannabis is becoming interesting because I remember my brother, who was deceased, unfortunately, but he died of cancer, all right? When they were giving him all the chemo, he was smoking the marijuana to alleviate the nausea, all right? And marijuana is also used if you have muscle pains, correct? All right, so it's actually a very good drug. Now, here in Maryland, where I am, it's not legalized recreationally, but we do have medical marijuana, all right, that you can get, and we have stores. And basically, you find a doctor who's willing to write the script, all right, and you'll apply, you get this medical marijuana card, all right, and then you can go to the medical marijuana store and get whatever you need. So anyway, we're going to talk about what Zach does with this, and let me just say that we are brought to you by, obviously, my company, Jaeger CPA Review, all right, the only course that teaches the blueprints, the tasks, the only course. If you don't follow the blueprints, you're not going to pass the exam, all right? So keep that in mind, Now, Zach, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, hey, my pleasure. Thank you for being here. And tell us, how did you get into the cannabis industry? What made you decide to not be a CPA and have clients in other areas?
Well, it's actually a pretty unorthodox story, let's put it that way. I didn't have necessarily the traditional CPA career. Started in public accounting, went to private equity. While I was in private equity, wound up getting into the tech space. And long story short, wound up in a WeWork. And in the office next to mine was a retired Wall Street professional who was deploying capital into the cannabis space. So this is back 2016, where the industry looked a little bit different. So really the big focus was on California and Colorado. And he started sourcing deals. He was representing himself, family offices, high net worth individuals who were very interested in the space, but not limited like most financial institutions are, like most hedge funds, et cetera. So we hit it off and started helping him look at certain deals. And that was really my first foray into the space. Now, one of the things that's very interesting, and as a matter of sort of self-preservation, for lack of a better term, was speaking to the AICPA, the New York State Society, pretty much anyone I could think of to really ask, am I okay here? Can I sign a tax return? Can I actually participate in this industry and not put my license at risk? And at that point, I got a very resounding, we don't know. So at that point, I helped to form the Cannabis Committee for the New York State Society of CPAs, which was really one of the first of its kind across the country, just an area where professionals who had experience in the industry or who wanted to learn from that experience could really come together, learn from each other, and help to advise where we could, including at the state level where, as we know, New York's coming a long, long way, slowly as it does, but it's moving forward. So that was really my first foray, and I've been in the industry ever since. So I do work in other industries, crypto, tech, real estate, auto, et cetera. But it's certainly the most interesting, for sure.
You're in cryptocurrency also? You do cryptocurrency? And you say crypto, what do you mean by that?
Yes, cryptocurrency, NFTs. So dealing with individuals who've invested heavily in the space and the tax consequences there, dealing with the ancillaries of the technologies and sort of the surrounding areas of the cryptocurrency space, as well as quite a few funds who've deployed significant capital into the space.
So if I came to you, if I did cryptocurrency, what percentage of your practice is dealing in cryptocurrency?
Well, that's one it's growing. But between that and cannabis, those are the two fastest growing areas. So percentage-wise, it's still relatively small compared to cannabis, which I've been in much longer, but it's growing significantly, as the general market is as well.
And let me make sure I understand that the only states where they've legalized it, Colorado, right? And California, what other states have they legalized it?
So legalized is a very interesting term. So you could be decriminalized, you could be legal for medical usage, or you can be full adult use, which is anyone 21 and over is able to purchase. And I think it's 10 states now that are, as we're recording this anyway, that are full legal and growing. So it's ever expanding, let's put it that way.
Not a lot of religious groups that are against this whole thing of legalization of marijuana. Are you dealing with any of those groups?
So I think that's where it's also an interesting conversation where the pros and cons groups that are either for or against, I wouldn't necessarily limit it to one specific group because it's not one generation, it's not one age group, it's not one religious group. It's really dealing with decades and decades of stereotypes and the imagery that's out there, the reefer madness that's just been so prevalent for a long time. So in that regard, I think there's a lot of misconceptions that do need to be dealt with. And it's something significant for a professional. You know, one of the big questions that comes up as a CPA is that reputational risk. So, you know, we all have our portfolios of clients. What are they going to think if I take on a cannabis client? What is my insurance company going to think? You know, how is it going to affect my policy, my coverage, if I take on a cannabis client? These are some pretty serious areas that we have to consider.
Colorado is legalized for recreational and also, I guess, medical. But does that mean that the federal government has not legalized marijuana, right?
That's correct. So cannabis is still a Schedule I drug, and that means that it is federally illegal for all intents and purposes.
Well, has any of the federal governments come in there and arrested people in Colorado? The, you know, even though the state of Colorado legalizes it?
So that's a pretty loaded conversation. So there have been issues that have come up. Now, during the Obama administration, they had something called the Cole Memo, where DOJ was not going to go in if there were businesses operating in a legal market. Now, the Cole Memo was rescinded by the Trump administration. Now, that being said, if you were a legal operating business in a legal market, then the likelihood of the federal government coming in and arresting you is relatively low. Now, if you're not being compliant with your taxes or your license status or any of a short list, then there's always the issue of the federal government coming in, and your audit risk is significant.
And what did Trump do? He went back to the position that it's illegal. Well, what was Trump's position versus Obama's position?
Well, from a positional standpoint, technically, it didn't change. It's just that the memo was rescinded. Now, depending on the state, you had the local representation of the DOJ, you know, different, you know, the federal attorneys at the state levels who it was their discretion whether they would actually pursue any sort of action against these legally operating businesses. And that was a case-by-case basis.
Wouldn't it be the Drug Enforcement Agency? Is that part of the Department of Justice? Or who? I would think the DEA would come in on that.
Well, now we're getting into some specific issues. Now, technically, as an enforcement arm, the answer is it depends. So DOJ would be starting the action, and then, you know, theoretically it would go from there. But my understanding is that the DEA had different things to focus on, and that it was really up to the DOJ, the IRS, various authorities to determine what the right action was.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a good example.
Yeah, go ahead.
So there was actually a chain based, I believe they were based out of Denver, where it made headlines because, oh, they had however many locations shut down.
Who's based out of Denver, the DEA?
So what happened was they weren't in compliance with their licenses, so they were technically operating illegally. So while at one point they were fully licensed, you know, by the book, it turned out that they didn't stay fully compliant. And then that's when they ran into some pretty specific issues. And that's when they were shut down, and all the fun that comes with that. But if you're a legally operating business, if you've gone through, you've stayed compliant with your taxes, with the filings, and one little detail that a lot of people, a lot of operators can overlook, you still have to operate like a real business, like any other business out there. So payroll taxes have to be paid, any sort of estimated taxes, depending on your corporate structure, have to be made, et cetera, et cetera. So those little details can't be overlooked.
So the stores in, for example, Colorado, I've been told that one of the things that you should not acquire or buy in a store that's legalized, like in Colorado, is any candy, because they don't have an exact measurement, all right? And each piece of candy can be different, which means that potentially you could get really high on the candy, okay? And what happens if you get high and have a car accident, all right? what would happen in a case like that? Have you heard of any cases like that?
So here's what's really interesting. Well, one, that years ago, and this is going back pretty far, that was a major concern where you would have in a batch, let's just say it's 100 milligrams of THC, and it would all just in the mixing process be allocated to, you know, one or two pieces out of the whole tray there. But it's come a very long way. The processes have become exponentially better. So that's a significantly lower concern. The testing is much better. So in my mind, the concern for that is down significantly. The other thing that's interesting, the statistics, the data coming out show that smoking is down at least 30%. And driving while intoxicated because of cannabis. So in these markets that have fully legal cannabis, that's down as well. And there's been no statistical evidence that a legal cannabis market leads to any sort of increase in driving under the influence of cannabis.
What's
so driving while high is what you're intimating.
Yeah. What's the biggest selling item in those cannabis stores? Do they have an item that people use the most? Is it still the cigarettes or something else?
So flower is always going to be, at least for, no, I shouldn't say always, because going forward, actually, the numbers are changing, but at least where we stand now, flower is typically the best seller with edibles.
Flowers?
Flower, the plant. The plant itself.
Like a cake or something.
No, flower as in.
The flowers you sniff. Wait a minute.
So the plant itself.
How does cannabis get involved with flowers? I don't. Is it dipped in that?
That's a technical term. So of buying individual buds of, if you're going to buy a gram, let's just say, you'd be buying a gram of the plant directly. It's called flower.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of Mother's Day, Valentine's.
Exactly.
Where you give them a plant of marijuana, and you say, hey, you want to get high? Sniff the plant. Okay, well, thank you for clearing that up.
No, of course. But yeah, in that regard, I think the SKUs, the products that are offered and sold, are changing, which is interesting, as states open up. So depending on the market, there are restrictions on what you can sell, on the potency of items that are sold. And it depends state by state, market by market, which from a compliance standpoint makes this even more difficult on top of all the federal and local issues that come up.
The Denver market was sort of, their economy wasn't doing well. And then they were smart enough, and I really commend them, they were smart enough to legalize this. And that area is now, I don't have to tell you, it's booming. All right?
No question. And they recently celebrated $1 billion in tax revenue, which is pretty momentous, honestly. That's a big number.
Yeah, they like to take the money in, okay, the state and federal, but federal can always say, hey, we tax illegal items anyway. They're taxable income. But I don't know if the federal government will really, you think federal government will change the rule and say, we legalize it also?
Eventually. Now, what's going to be fun and interesting there is, how do we define that? So what does legalizing even mean? Because you could reschedule it. So instead of it being a Schedule I narcotic, which means it's a hard no across the board, you could Schedule II, Schedule V. There's all sorts of avenues it could go. And even beyond that, you could deschedule it. Now, some answers that are going to have to come in the future, if you deschedule it, whose problem does it become? Does the federal government completely back off? You know, they collect a nominal tax on transactions, and it becomes a state's issue? Or is there some, whether the FDA or another federal organization that specifically governs it? That remains to be seen, and that's sort of the devil you don't know. Now, there's a specific code subsection, which is probably the most important couple of sentences in this whole industry, and that's IRC 280E. Now, basically, long story short, what that states is that a business that's operating within the cannabis, and it's not cannabis specific, it's any Schedule I drug, that's operating cannot deduct any expenses. So there are no deductions. That means no deductions, no federal tax credits, et cetera. And that's significant.
Taxable income, won't they?
Oh, effective tax rates are fun. Let's put it that way. And that's where tax planning structuring becomes really, really important.
Well, if I have a cannabis store in Denver, I take in all his money, and I have absolutely no deductions at all. I mean, can they record depreciation expense on their equipment or anything? I mean, like they have.
And you do get cost of goods sold. So that's really one of the areas where the devil's in the details as far as what your cost of goods sold allocation policy is, and just being very careful how you tread there, making sure your documentation is as clear and concise as it can be. We've had to deal with a lot of cleanup cases where, how do I put this? Groups were a little aggressive in what they considered cost of goods sold. And the IRS is not, one, they're not going to be fooled. You know, they're very wise to what a lot of these businesses have done and are doing. And two, it's just for the sake of clarity, for the sake of being a bit more conservative and saving yourself a lot of issues, coming up with that policy and making sure that it's reasonable.
If they can deduct depreciation, right? Correct?
It depends.
It depends. What does it depend upon?
Well, one, how aggressive you are, and two, what you're depreciating.
They must have display cases, don't they?
Right.
Okay.
It depends where you are in the vertical as well. So, and by vertical, I mean whether you're a cultivator, whether you grow the plant, whether you're in that mid-tier, so a manufacturer, processor, so you're taking that raw plant and turning it into oils or another derivative of the plant, and then the retail side. Now, as the markets become more sophisticated, there are other subsections, but for simplicity, those are the main areas of the vertical. And if you're looking at retail, so if you're that the dispensary like you're discussing, realistically right now, the only thing that really should be considered cost of goods sold, and that's obviously as of right this second, and yeah, things change obviously, is really inventory. Everything else is just, you know, in my mind, and again, I'm just speaking for myself, there's others out there who obviously have different opinions and this will evolve over time, but really everything else you just, for retail, it's not okay. I would not be a cowboy enough to go down that road.
Are generally accepted accounting principles, are they applicable to cannabis? Or do you have your own generally accepted cannabis accounting rules?
GAAP still applies. And what's interesting, at the AICPA, we're actually trying to work on what standardized financials look like, what standardized guidance is going to be. Because right now, because there's so many differences state by state, it's really tough to nail down what one good set of rules are.
So when you're doing, you're applying GAAP to the cannabis, it sounds to me like you're taking a chance, aren't you? Because has anybody said that cannabis follows the same generally accepted accounting principles as though you opened a supermarket or something?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right, so you go by GAAP, right? I mean, what is your greatest fear being in this business? You said, you know, people will look at you and say, oh God, you're doing accounting for cannabis? All right. First of all, I bet they don't even I bet they don't even know what the word cannabis is. They probably think it's cannibals.
I would take you up on that bet. Honestly, this is one of the most popular topics everyone wants to discuss. Between this and crypto, it's really tough walking into a place and not walking out with having a couple of pretty long and interesting conversations on cannabis. And it's from a couple of different ways. A lot of people want to invest. A lot of people are just curious. What is this thing? What's going on? Is it legal? How can I throw my money on it? Should I? Should I invest in any of the PTPs from up in Canada? You know, there's a lot of different conversations to be had, but honestly, in my experience, it's been but almost exclusively positive.
Thank you so much for listening to Jaeger CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Jaeger CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.